Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne and welcome back to Pod on the Time. It's time for another chat.
Pod on the Time.
Pod on the Time, is that what I said? I thought I said Pod on the Time.
I thought it was a time, but I don't know, we can be whatever you want us to be, listener.
Hey, Chris, we can make our own decisions now. We decide our own destiny, don't we? If we want to be Pod on the Time, it's time for Pod on the Time. Time. Yeah, exactly. This has been slick, hasn't it, for a start, considering it's just me and you. I'm sure George will be enjoying this. Yes, George isn't here. He's got Champions League fever, unfortunately. We've got to say get well soon to him. Chris, have you given him some lurgy or something at the weekend? What's happened?
Well, I think he's just been around me for too long. Eventually it wears off on him. But no, I mean, I do have some sort of sympathy for him, but at the same time, my sympathy only extends so far because I think he's also overextended himself and then left himself in this position, which has also left me with extra work to do. So therefore, that's where my sympathy levels have a limit.
But you can tell you're not bitter about that at all, Chris.
I'm not at all. Not I haven't already mentioned this to you off air either, Taylor. This is
definitely
just the first
not, time. No. Right then, let's have a little bit of a brief reaction to what happened at the weekend. Nick Voldemada, the player that I personally scouted on behalf of Newcastle United, Chris, if you remember, took another gigantic stride towards cult hero status, didn't he?
Have you bought a long sleeve shirt with his name on now? Have you already done that? Have you?
It may be in the post. Maybe.
And a wig.
I'm currently
and a
trying
and a
to grow a little goatee and some blonde highlights. And yeah, definitely.
Yes, quite the opening weekend. And obviously, George and I talked about this a lot on the Matchday podcast. But even a couple of days on, to be able to talk about the fact that Newcastle have signed a club record centre forward who has scored on his opening game. It's not the situation you've got with another striker who's been compared to a lot, who Newcastle tried to go for in the summer, and it looks to be labouring at Manchester United and Benjamin Sesko.
Yeah.
And all the talk is on, when is he going to score his first goal? Even Gyökeres at Arsenal, after he didn't score in his first game, it was like, I think he'd gone 2 games without a goal, and already the scrutiny's there. But for Voldemada and Newcastle, that's not the case. Do him the world of good, do Newcastle the world of good. The reality is, that going into the weekend, they weren't entirely sure how it would necessarily go for him. That they've got huge hopes for him longer term, but in the short term, how long does it take someone to adapt to the Premier League? And you can't say that suddenly he's arrived because he's scored in his first game. There is obviously, there are going to be challenges to come. But to have had that start gives everyone a massive fillip. And it was interesting that afterwards Howe talked about the fact that it was so pleased both for the game and for Voldemada to score and for Newcastle to win that all the focus can now go to Thursday night and on Barcelona rather than the sort of lingering negativity there may have been if they hadn't. So yeah, huge for everyone involved.
Philip Lahm's been chipping off in The Guardian as well, hasn't he?
He has. Now, I don't know if anyone saw this, but Philip Lahm, going into the weekend, had done a column in The Guardian where he talked about Florian Wirtz coming to the Premier League and also Nick Voldemada, and basically said that Wirtz is an absolute certainty that he will perform in the Premier League and will make that transition, whereas with Voldemada, he basically talked about there's no real bank of evidence longer term that Voldemada necessarily make it. He said that he's got all these wonderful attributes, but at the same time, you're almost taking a punt to a certain degree. Now, the reason that's so interesting, other than the fact that Philip Lahm, who's a Germany legend, won the World Cup, is that Philip Lahm was actually a footballing consultant for Stuttgart for 3 years, which is where Newcastle have just signed Voldemada from. So it felt like pretty strong comments.
Yeah.
Now, for Voldemada to have sort of almost brushed those off or brushed off any of their negativity and to have got the goal, that's what I think Newcastle and people behind the scenes have been really impressed with Voldemada for, and what they feel that the club record tag was never likely to affect him, is that because some of them sort of almost make comparisons about the fact that because he's unusual looking, or he dresses in an unusual way, or he's always been that sort of unusual figure up front who's really good with his feet but not the sort of target man figure, that he's almost so comfortable in his own skin now that no matter what tag is given, no matter what criticism is out there,
yeah,
he can brush that off. Now, obviously, that the proof will be in the pudding longer term. But for him to have started in the way that he had and to have not let any of that affect him and just look like he was enjoying himself. He said there were friends going to the weekend.
I absolutely loved watching him. I thought he looked like he knew exactly what he was about. He didn't look hesitant or unsure of himself whatsoever. It could have been really overwhelming for the lad in a big occasion, full stadium, his first game in the Premier League. He just looked naturally just comfortable and relaxed, dropping short for the ball, spinning in behind, getting the header at the back post. You know, people saying before the game, he doesn't score headers, he's not a number nine. Well, a certain Alan from work would have been proud with that one, definitely.
Closed his eyes and headed it, is what he said he did. He said that, Murph had said to me the day before, I'm going to put the ball into the box quite a lot, so if you can cross it. And then, so it's also just that sort of simplicity behind it. Newcastle have put a heck of a lot of work into him. There'd been four training sessions with him, but only two sort of main ones. And actually, they'd worked a lot on pressing, a lot on where everyone had to be and the like. And what nobody actually necessarily expected, despite him being 6'6", was that his goal would be an absolute trademark bullet header at the back post. Wonderful movement and then finish. And so, it was a picture-perfect goal and a picture-perfect start to his Newcastle United career.
Yes, lovely stuff. Any more news to emerge post-game from St James's?
Well, Eddie Howe said immediately after the match, that, as we said in the previous podcast, that Johan Visser, they were waiting on the results of him going to see a specialist after some scans that morning. Our understanding subsequently, as we reported elsewhere, is that it's likely to be about 4 to 6 weeks that Wisher is out for, which is frustrating in one sense because it means it's going to be after the October national break. But there were a lot of very strong rumours on social media over the weekend that he had an ACL problem. So that seems to have been avoided, thankfully, and because that would have basically been, if not season ending, then the majority of the season that he's out for. So that places a lot of scrutiny on and pressure on Voltimata and also Willa Sula to perform over the course of the next few weeks, Anthony Gordon as well, if he's required there. But as frustrating as that is, I think it's also a bit of a relief that this isn't a really serious knee problem, because as soon as you start to tear something within your knee, whether it's medial or cruciate, you'd be talking a matter of months rather than weeks. Yeah. So.
You've got some stats for us, and maybe a little quiz.
A little quiz, yeah. I mean, it's only you who's going to be in on this quiz, so I don't know how you necessarily feel about that.
That's okay. But, I mean, it means we don't have to deal with the blind rage of George whenever anybody mentions the word quiz. So
quite. I mean, the stat I was going to throw at you was that this is the first time that Newcastle have collected 3 points at St James's Park without a striker whose name I forget, who I think left in the summer, since December 2023.
Good Lord.
So that feels like quite a big moment in itself, that the first game when he's actually officially left, that they've managed to do that. But actually, my quiz for you is that Voltimata was the 15th different Newcastle player to score on his Premier League debut. Oh, can you name the rest any of them? Well, now we're not going to get you to name all of them, but let's just see if you can reel off a few quite quickly.
Papa Cisse scored on his debut, didn't he?
Papias Cisse against Aston Villa. He was the sixth player, I believe.
Are these just strikers, by the way, or are these...
No.
All over the pitch.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Papias Cisse.
At St James's Park as well.
Not all at St James's Park. These are just on the debut.
No. Moussa Sissoko.
Moussa Sissoko was his home debut, I think.
Was it? Well, there you go then.
Because it was Aston Villa away, I think he made his debut on it.
Did he? Oh, he didn't score in that game, did he? Johan Gabay scored in that game.
No, Johan Gabay.
Go on, pour us out my misery, Chris. We're going to be here all day doing this.
Well, we'll run through the air. So the first one was Alex Mathey.
Good
in
Lord.
September 1993.
Was that the goal Ferdinand when he slid on his arse and chipped it over the keeper against Sheffield
Wednesday?
It was
against Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday, yeah.
Les we Ferdinand. Were wearing our away kit that day for some strange reason.
Weird. Les Ferdinand against Coventry City in August 1995. Stefan Givarsh against Liverpool August 1998.
World Cup winner, Stefan Givarsh. Exactly. Put some respect on his name.
Big Duncan Ferguson against Wimbledon, November 1998. Sisko against Hull City,
good
September
Lord.
2008. Papis Cisse against Aston Villa, February 2012. Jorginho Wijnaldum against Southampton, August 2015. Matty Longstaff against Manchester United, October 2019. Callum Wilson against West Ham, September 2020. Jeff Hendrick in exactly the same game.
Wow.
Joe Willock against Southampton, February 2021. Alexander Isak against Liverpool, August 2022. Sandro Tonali against Aston Villa, August 2023. Harvey Barnes against Villa, August 2023, and then Nick Voldemort. There you go. I mean, I want to credit to the, I've nicked this from NUFC.com, but that is quite the list.
That is quite a list. That's all we've got time for on Pod on the Tyne this week. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. No, that is amazing. Some amazing stats there. We also had a lovely email from Vicky as well about the Great North Run. It is very, very long, so we aren't going to be able to read the whole thing out, but thank you, Vicky, and do come and say hello if you see us out and about again. And we also really enjoyed Vicky's Instagram handle, which is Big Vic Energy, which I like a lot. Right then, more emails later on. But for now, Chris, the lasses. 1-1 versus Sheffield United in the first game at Gateshead Stadium. A disappointing result, isn't it? Opponents have had an unsettled start and lost 4-0 to Sunderland at home, but Newcastle couldn't get all 3 points.
No, I mean, you can look at this two ways in the sense that Newcastle rescued a point in the end when they trailed for quite a long period. But at the same time, at home against Sheffield United, a team with a drop points at last season as well, Newcastle were targeting a victory here. And Becky Langley, I watched her interview after the game, and she struggles to hide her emotions. She's trying her best. She's trying to keep the level out, but she basically said that if Newcastle start that way going forward, then they're not going to be successful at all, and that they need to sort that out, and they will sort out by next week, is what she said. And she basically said we could have nicked it in the end, but we wouldn't really have deserved to, and that Sheffield United had a specific game plan which frustrated them. Now, to have rescued a point could prove to be very important going forward. And you have to get the adjustment of them moving to Gateshead Stadium. Now, that's not an excuse, it's just that that will take them a bit of time. It's not their home ground, they haven't played there in the last few years. It's now their new home ground.
Also, the switch from an artificial pitch to a grass pitch as well might take some getting used to.
It will do, I'm sure it will, but they want to be there, and I'm sure they'll see the benefits going forward. And more than, I think it was 2,500 roughly fans there, so wonderful turnout, seemed to be some wonderful displays, and they're trying to really make that into their home going forward. But yeah, a frustrating draw, but at the same time, if they can build from that, and then if they take something from the fact that they managed to get back into the game, then really it sounds like Becky Langley's determined they're going to respond next weekend.
There were some worrying shades of last season's form, though, wasn't there? Newcastle had all the ball throughout the first half, but not an awful lot of penetration. And then they concede a sucker punch just before half-time, a long-range shot, which loops in over the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, there are worrying shades of last season, but also this is largely a new side. A lot of the players are new. They're still getting to know one another. And again, that's the adjustment of everything. Part of it is these players, they have a lot of high-quality players. I mean, they were sort of playing 3-5-2 at certain points. Speaking to some people who were there and watching the game, they were talking about how the quality of some of the players that they have, and they think they can extract far more from. And it's about building those relationships, which still is going to take a bit of time. So to have conceded just before half time, I think it felt like it took a little bit of the wind out of the sails, and Newcastle took them a bit of time to recover sort of psychologically. But once this team hits their straps, once they start to really get to know one another, there is confidence that they really can actually put some of these teams to the sword.
And they did fight back with a goal from sub Jas McQuaid and a hectic finish as well. All Newcastle again, but they couldn't really carve out any major chances. They were definitely missing that big midfield duo, Nobbs and Gautreau as well, who were absent on the day. It's safe to say, though, Chris, Becky Langley's got a job on her hands. There's an awful lot of players who've came in recently, and it's going to take some integrating, isn't it?
It is, and I mean, the ambition is that they go up. We've said that. It's to win the league, actually, is what they want to do, but the minimum requirement, really, is to go up this season, and that's sort of frustrating that they'll feel like drop points already. But there's only one team with a 100% record so far after two games, and that's Charlton. So Newcastle are fifth on goal difference. Southampton, Birmingham and Sunderland all have 4 points as well. So it's not like it's been an absolutely disastrous result. It will be frustrating, but it's not disastrous. But then next weekend they go to Birmingham City as well, who they're already level on points with, and they've had a bit of a battle with last season. So that's Sunday, and that feels like a match where Newcastle definitely need to respond. And if they can get a draw there, would be a good result in many ways. But if they can go there and win, I'm sure the confidence will start flowing again.
Could be a potential barn burner, Chris, or a right old ding dong.
Good words.
Yes, absolutely. Right, let's have a quick break and we'll be back in a minute to talk about the good old Champions League.
Are you gonna do the, are you gonna sing the tune on the way back in?
I'm gonna go Barcelona. Absolutely not. Although I know Ollie's now gonna put this in, so so excitement building. It's now a little over, just check my notes here, one season since Newcastle were in the Champions League. There have been big changes though, Chris.
Yes, you always come to me with technical questions like this, don't you? Which I'll try to explain as briefly as I possibly can. So last time, Newcastle were in a pool stage in the so-called group of death with Borussia Dortmund, AC Milan and PSG, which they ended up finishing bottom of, unfortunately, which knocked them out of the competition. They were at one stage potentially going to go through the last 16. Then if you finished third, you would have gone to the Europa League, but Newcastle finished bottom of the group, so got knocked out. Now there is no longer a pool stage. It is a league phase. So there are 36 teams, expanded to 36 it was last year, and you play 8 different teams, 4 different ones at home, 4 different ones away, rather than the same ones home and away as you did 2 years ago. And cumulative number of points at the end of it, the top 8 will automatically qualify for the last 16. Then teams 9 through till 24 will face off against one another in a playoff round to get through to the last 16, and then teams 25 through till 36 will be knocked out. So Barcelona are Newcastle's first of 4 home games. They are the top seeds, so you play 1 team from each seed. So Newcastle's hardest home game comes first, theoretically, at least on paper.
Well, there you go. That's not convoluted at all, is it? Welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, though. We have to say, a veteran reporter of past Newcastle United Champions League campaigns, Jacob Whitehead, son. How the devil are you?
Hello. First appearance since the relaunch. Exciting.
It's amazing to have you back, mate. You're all right. You're up in Bonnie Scotland, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been spending a lot. I mean, up in Scotland this week, up in Newcastle last week, Durham the week before. I've just been, you know, just can't stay away from...
Honorary Northerner.
Yeah, exactly.
Lovely stuff. Well, doesn't get any bigger than this, really, does it, to kick us off with the Champions League?
No, I mean, like, this is really the best fixture, isn't it, to have first up? You've got to say, like...
You would say so, yeah.
No use building up to the excitement. You might as well just go wham, bam, thank you, man.
Gets the juices flowing, doesn't
it? In Barcelona at home. And, like, having been at St James's before for massive European games, like the PSG game 2 seasons ago, it's just tension in the air, which goes all day, and you can feel it. It's palpable. It's City waking up.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, too, about this. So, Taylor, you're obviously there as Newcastle United fan,
yes.
Born and bred. Jacob, you were there in a sort of semi... independent capacity. I wasn't actually there that night. I watched it at home. Can you just both sort of recollect what that day and night was like, really, starting with you, maybe, Taylor, from the Newcastle perspective?
I mean, it was a lot of excitement during the day leading up to it. I had a really sort of round the houses plan of taking my boy to the game, even though he didn't know that we had tickets for the game. I'd convinced him that we were unable to get tickets. We'd managed to get them, and then as we got closer to the kickoff, I said, come on, get your coat on and let's go. And he went, go away. And I said, come on, we're going to the match. So we got there, and obviously that game happened. It was just the greatest experience I've had inside that stadium in all the years I've supported Newcastle United. And the boy, I think, that's one of those nights where you know a child has properly fallen in love with football. Like, he already loved Newcastle United, he loved going to games, but that's one of those nights that he will never, ever forget. And bearing in mind, I was still trying to get him to go to bed at 10 past 12 that night. And he had school the next morning. It was one of those that's going to stay with him for a long time, you know. Yeah, just an unbelievable evening. It'll stay with me forever. Incredible.
It's one of my 3 best days in the job, I think. You see so much what it meant to people. Me and George did a piece where we did 24 hours in the life of Newcastle the City. So I was down at the stadium at 7 a.m. in the morning, 12 hours before kickoff, and everything's quiet. There's just people sweeping up the streets. And it just built throughout the day. So I was at Gateshead Stadium in the afternoon to watch the UEFA... What's the acronym? Is it the
Youth League?
UEFA Youth League, yeah. Stood next to Mbappe's parents to watch Ethan Mbappe play.
I mean, talking about the boy wonder, did they turn to you and describe you as that as well, rather than their own?
Yeah, when Ethan turned up, they just sort of shook their head at him and motioned towards me, and I said, sorry, bud. And he was sold soon after that, really. So
that's all right, yeah.
And then I do think the PSG fans contributed to it, because they did that walk-up, didn't they, to the city centre. From the city centre to the stadium. Because they are quite sort of ominous, I think it did get everyone quite up for it, because they were getting sort of lined in.
Yeah.
It was a nice level of sort of intimidating meets challenge. Sort of feel like you're facing the hacker at the start of it.
They never shut up for the entire game as well, and I think it kind of pushed a lot of our fans to sort of think, well, we can make some noise as well, by the way. So that it is the loudest I've ever heard St James's Park.
Well, the moment which sticks with me is from only about 5 minutes in, when I think Marquinhos is on the ball deep in the area, and
yeah,
he just has it sort of stuck under his foot for ages because he can't see where to play the pass, because Newcastle is just flooding up so much, and it's was quite interesting that that was what really, really got the crowd going. It wasn't even a crunching chat. It wasn't a crunching tackle. It wasn't a shot. It wasn't, you know, even... It was just... You could see how aggressive they were going to be with how they were going to harry PSG. And then that just went on. I mean, you had, like, Gelinton and Bruno, like, whipping up the crowd from about 10, 15 minutes in. You're like, hang on, boys. Like, hold on to your hats here. You can't get going too early. But they just kept up that energy for the whole game. And was it Almiron who scored the opener? And so from that moment on, they're just on their way.
And then Fabian Scher twatted one in while falling over on his arse as well, didn't he?
A beautiful goal from a beautiful man, Chris, and I won't hear anything else said. PSG 2023, Chris, is very much my generation's Barcelona 97, isn't it? It was the same sort of thing, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I like how you've come to me as if I was older than six when Newcastle beat
Barcelona. it was a toss-up between you and Jacob, and I think...
You can't have it both ways. You can't act like a 56-year-old and then suddenly say a different...
Fair enough. But no, that's the game that you sort of, and it was, that was the, when you talked about Newcastle's memories in Europe, that was the one that everyone referred to for, of certainly in the modern era, in the Champions League era, until now PSG. Some people who've witnessed both say that PSG is now the crowning moment. Others still refer to that Barcelona game, Tino Masprea's hat-trick, Gillespie's crosses into the box. What a wonderful occasion that was, and it was Newcastle really arriving for the first time in that European elite level. Putting Barcelona away like that. So yeah, this is a fixture which evokes a lot of memories. There's also obviously the Sir Bobby connections we've mentioned before, and Newcastle playing them in 2002, 2003, when they actually lost both those games. So this is the fifth time that they'll meet Barcelona, the third time they'll have hosted them, and it's ones each in terms of games so far at St. James's Park.
Robert Lewandowski as well, Jacob's the latest global superstar, unmasked as a closet Geordie, famously having a Alan Shearer number 9 shirt given to him by his family when he was younger. I put it to you, sir, that the mags are massive and everybody loves us.
I see it with Lewandowski, some of the Shearer attributes.
Yeah.
You know, two of the best pure finishers as strikers of probably, you know, since 2000. Do you reckon Toni Kroos is going to show up?
I'd love that.
At this game?
Love that.
And that'll cause controversy with all the people not happy that he's managed to get a ticket to us. Even if he's bought his membership, so...
Nothing would surprise me anymore, though. I'm waiting for an interview with Juan Sebastian Verón where he says he modelled his entire game around David Batty or something. You know, it's just that this is what seems to be happening now. It's very, very strange.
David Batty, you played in 97?
He did, yes. Very good. He loved a long sleeve shirt as well, Chris, didn't he?
There you go, yeah.
Speaking about Kroos rather than Lewandowski, it is a really useful attribute to Newcastle that these sort of absolute stars are watching them and being attracted by the style of play, by the fans, by the stadium. Like when you're thinking of recruiting players, and we've spoken to the Cows going home about it this summer, but having that as an attraction that one of the best midfielders in this generation wants to be a part of that, I can only stand Newcastle in good stead going forward as a sort of serious note to it.
Certainly does. Speaking of superstars as well, Lamine Yamal potentially going to miss out, Chris.
Well, yeah, it's sort of touch and go on that front. Hansi Flick gave a rather angry press conference over the weekend when he talked about the fact that Yamal had played for Spain quite a lot during the international break, even though they were hammering teams, and that, yeah, he's got a bit of a ground problem, so he missed out the weekend. He's touch and go. Howe was asked about whether he wanted him to be involved on Saturday, and he basically gave his stock answer, which is you want all the best players to sort of be involved, but I'm sure there's also a large part of him thinks Lamine Yamal is not available.
Can then, I just say, we'll I don't want...
Even though Barcelona have some breakup players to be involved,
I don't want him to play. Yeah, absolutely not. And Barcelona pumped Valencia 6-0 on Sunday as well. Capacity crowd of 6,000 at the Johan Cruyff Arena. They have apparently got quite a high line, Barcelona, Chris. Do you think it could be something Newcastle could get after?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the 6-0 scoreline from the weekend, and that's a side
definitely.
In form, really, isn't it? I mean, Hansi Flick had a bit of a go at them, I think, at the back end, of just before going into the international break, saying that he wasn't very pleased about, I think they'd drawn one of the games and they weren't quite at the levels they needed to be off the ball. But one thing that, and the reason that they played at the Johan Cruyff Arena, which has only got 6,000 fans, is because the Camp Nou is currently being renovated, and it was meant to be done by the start of this season, or they hoped it was going to be done by the start of this season. Last year they played at the Olympic Stadium in Barcelona, but it isn't yet finished.
That's right.
And the Olympic Stadium Barcelona has had concerts on, I believe, so they couldn't play there, so they've had to play this one game in front of 6,000, which, considering they have a stadium which is nearly 100,000 capacity, can you imagine the scramble for tickets there for that game? I don't know how they decided that. But yeah, the high line is something that Hansi Flick is renowned for, that there's a few different sort of Pep Guardiola students who or people who are acolytes, really, and he's one of them. But he sort of, and also from the sort of Johan Cruyff inspired as well. But he has a very extreme version of a high line, in basically that Barcelona will stick to this. They will play high. They will be beyond the halfway most of the time, and it means that they dominate possession in the opposition half, force high turnovers, but at the same time have huge gaps to run into. And I know that Newcastle have identified this as something that they want to try and exploit if they can. They have pace already in the team from the team at the weekend. You have Jacob Murphy, Harvey Barnes, the fullbacks, but then you could also have Anthony Gordon back from suspension. Anthony Elanga didn't start the weekend. Is that because Newcastle are targeting this match? It'll be interesting to see how Newcastle do approach that, because I know that is one thing that they've identified, that is where they feel they can get at Barcelona, and they've got to be clinical if they do.
Jacob is our professional Anthony Gordon correspondent. He's going to have a bit of a task on his hands to get back into the team straight away, but you would imagine he'll play against Barca, and I wonder what his head's going to be like, because obviously he'll want to make a difference after what happened against Liverpool.
It's a difficult one for Hal to manage, in that you want to show players that they need to earn their way back in, that they should be very careful about losing their place in the team, particularly when it's self-inflicted in the way that Gordon's was, which means that you would, in some senses, be reluctant to straight away give him his place back for the biggest game of the season so far. At the same time, his skill set is massively suited for this game. Get running in behind with Elanga. Harvey Barnes hasn't necessarily been in brilliant form over the past few weeks, and so you can see the appeal for Gordon there. He has at least been keeping sharp as well over the international window, in the sense of it's not like he's not been playing at all. He's been training with top players.
He played quite well, I hear, away at Serbia. It's not that you saw it, Chris. Yeah.
He had a good, it felt like a lot was going through him. He was getting lots of touches on the ball. He looked dangerous. And part of me thinks that if Voltomar is going to be starting again, you want to have some pretty experienced players either side of him, which you would certainly have if you had Gordon and Elanga.
Just on Gordon, I mean, just to explain why he hasn't featured in the last two Newcastle matches, because he was sent off against Liverpool. He's still suspended in the Premier League this weekend when Newcastle go to Bournemouth, but he is available for this game, which is why you would think he probably will start, particularly if Newcastle have identified the potential pace in behind. If you're going to rotate your squad, as we feel Eddie Howe needs to do, what he said he needs to do, they now have the depth to potentially do. Given that Gordon hasn't been involved, had the weekend off, it feels like the ideal time, because you also know he isn't going to be involved Sunday. He probably isn't going to start against you may start him against Bradford City next week, but just to get some minutes into his legs. But he can basically just focus on Barcelona, and you can basically say, run yourself into the ground in this game.
And you would imagine, Chris, as well, War Flags will be ready to deliver, wouldn't you? The atmosphere is going to be important on the night, and if we can channel some of that PSG energy, that would be amazing.
I think they're describing it as one of their biggest displays ever, if not the biggest display ever. They've had volunteers in for the last few days, a heck of a lot of people involved in getting it ready and getting it together. Obviously fan-funded, it will be special. It'll build up to the atmosphere. Obviously that contributed to the PSG one previously. All of those Champions League matches that the displays beforehand contributed to them. So yeah, very much ready to deliver. I also just want to touch upon another player who I think Thursday night feels big for, because Newcastle signed him for nights like these, and he was only able to be involved in a couple of them before his suspension, and that is Sandro Tonali. Newcastle signed him as their Champions League ready player in 2023. He started the first two games, but by that stage was still playing as number 8, came off in sort of the 73rd and 65th-ish minute, I think, in the first couple of games, came on in the third match as a substitute, but by that stage Newcastle knew, and he knew, that his suspension was upcoming, and then he missed those final three critical matches, and if he'd been around, would history have been different? It's hard to say. He wasn't the Sandro Tonali then that he is now, but how magnificent he was on Saturday. He's played in Champions League semi-finals before. He is experienced at this level. He knits everything together. And if Newcastle are going to have a chance of beating Barcelona on Thursday, they need that midfield three to tick together, and they need him to be at his absolute best once again.
And we'll be there on Thursday night for a special Pod on the Tyne match day episode as well, so keep your ears open for that just after the game. A small point of order as well, Barcelona actually played at the Johan Cruyff Stadium on Sunday. The Johan Cruyff Arena is Ajax's home in Amsterdam. That can accommodate 56,000 fans there. And another example of me being Ron Burgundy and just literally reading whatever is on the running order without even thinking about it or questioning it. There we go. We've got an email from Declan, who asked for recommendations on where to visit in the city when he came up for his first Newcastle game in 20 years. We got this email from him. Just want to say thank you for the recommendations. Ended up in the bodega for a couple before the match. Tried the burrito from Zapatistas. Outstanding recommendations. Today has been a mixture of emotions. My dad is my connection to Newcastle, and I lost him when I was 12, but today felt like being home. I've never felt closer to his memory. Capped off the day by buying my daughter a new kit with her initials and a number 9 on the back. She'll be with me next time for definite. The cycle of Geordie fandom continues. And that is from Declan. Thank you for that, Declan. Emails continue as well in what we are now calling the International Mag section. Toronto keeps getting a mention with our new CEO, Matty Longstaff, etc. I'll just say that we Torontonians wince whenever people pronounce the second T. It would be like someone saying Newcastle. Fair enough. If you want to learn yourself Canadian, you have to say Toronto or Toronto, eh? What do you reckon, Chris? Can you give that a go? Toronto?
Toronto.
Toronto.
Toronto. Toronto.
Yeah. Love and sausages. That's from Paul. I like that.
Keep the sausages coming.
Definitely. And yeah, another email from Toronto. It appears that Canada's only internet connection is currently based in Toronto. Another email from Toronto. Luke had his parking space nicked by a Liverpool fan. He says Tim Hortons is like Canadian Greggs, although we've been advised on social media that there is a lot less meat involved. We welcome emails, of course, from across the globe, but also Blake Lowe, Jarrow, Long Benton, those sort of places. So please get in touch. podonthetyne@gmail.com. Give us a follow on Twitter X and Blue Sky @podonthetyne, and give us a rating and a review on your podcast outlet of choice. Thank you very much, chaps, for your time. Jacob Whitehead, thank you for joining us in the midst of your holiday. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Good luck on Thursday. I'll be watching on keenly from the west of Scotland.
Yeah, thanks for jumping in. You know, old man George can't handle the pace anymore. But you did the Great North Run as well. But you're here, sprightly as ever.
Yeah, and thank you actually on the Great North Run to everyone who stopped and said hi as we're going along. I think I was quite good at saying hello back for the first 15K, and a few people said hi in the last few. And I think I did. If I didn't give you the time of day in the last couple, I was on the struggle bus at that point. So thank you, it's appreciated. And sorry if I didn't repay it with a chirpy hello.
That's fair enough. Well, thank you for your time today, Jacob. And thank you, Chris Woff, as well. What football shirt are you adorned in today?
This is...
very purple.
Colombo Sportive do Judge a Lobo from the Cameroon.
At least you didn't have any trouble pronouncing it, Chris.
Well, exactly, yeah. That was you can tell that I'm fluent.
Flatulent.
So this is one of my unusual tops on the menu I have. Very much looking forward to Thursday night. Anticipation certainly building. I'll be at St. James's Park on Wednesday when Eddie Howe and Bruno Guimaraes are going to be speaking before the match. Barcelona will also have their press conference, and they'll also do their thing where they pretend they're going to have a training session on the gate, on the pitch, but you can't actually watch really any what they do other than pass the ball to one another or run around a little bit. So,
yeah,
exciting times.
We'll hopefully catch up with a healthy George before the Barcelona game as well and have a lovely chin wag. I will warn you, though, there's a good chance I'll be 4 or 5 pints of Guinness deep by that point. So
we'll meet at 9 a.m.
Yeah, could get quite psychedelic. Lovely stuff. Right, thank you very much for listening. That's it from Pod on the Tyne. We will speak to you very, very soon. Enjoy Barcelona, and we'll be in your ears on Friday, hopefully. Take care. See you later. Bye-bye.